Welcome back to Good Food. I have two 55-gallon drums of water in my garage. I also bought enough dry beans at the beginning of the pandemic that I still haven't eaten them all. Does that make me a doomsday prepper? Hardly, especially when contrasted with how the ultra-rich among us are preparing for dystopia. Are they building $150,000 kitchens underground? Who would cook? I mean, many of them don't even know how. Douglas Rushkoff writes about the impact of digital technology on our lives. These last couple of years, he's had a front row seat to, as he describes them, a group of super rich preppers preparing to save themselves from the apocalypse. And as he points out, they're doing it at everyone else's expense. Hi, Douglas.
Hey, how you doing?
Well, I have to say your book was a harrowing read, and it's going to stick with me for a very long time.
Oh, well, I hope you got some of the comedy, too.
Definitely. So tell us a bit about your beat. Who do you usually work for, and what are their concerns?
Well, I mainly write books about technology and the future and how society changes, and I'm always really concerned with whether people are getting to use technology or technology is using people. And I guess because of all my writing, I've ended up being correct about a few things in the future, and like kind of predicting the internet or naming viral media or talking about this crash or that. So sometimes the tech investors and technologists will call me out to do a talk about the digital future to sort of spur new thinking or open their horizons or help them understand one trend or human need or another. But in this particular case, I was called out to do this talk that was supposed to be about the digital future, but instead of bringing me out on stage, they brought these five super wealthy guys into my green room to then start peppering me with questions about their bunkers. Like, should they stay in Alaska or New Zealand? How do they keep control of their security force? You know, which, you know, vertical farming technique is going to work? As if I'm some kind of an expert in survivalism.
So fascinating. So you meet with these guys, it's four men and one woman, billionaires. And on your way on the plane back from that experience, you are so affected by how the conversation went that you immediately write something and post it. And a lot of things unfold from there. Could you start by describing us what you call the mindset?
Yeah, well, the mindset is, I guess, what I took away from these guys is the belief that with enough money and technology that they can somehow insulate themselves from the reality they're creating using money and technology. It's as if they want to be able to build a car that could drive fast enough to escape from its own exhaust, because they're aware that what they're doing, that their practices are creating so much waste and slavery and economic inequality that eventually, you know, it's going to break things down. They believe even more than we do that society is coming apart, that civilization is ending. So they're investing, and they gave me the figure of 20%. They're investing 20% of their assets in what they call Plan B, which is, if everything breaks down, what can they do? Can they upload their consciousness to a chip? Can they get to a remote island? Can they protect themselves with a dome? Can they get off the planet altogether? And so they're all looking at what can they do to move ahead, to stay ahead of the devastation in their wake.
So it's so interesting because we've talked to preppers before in this show. And when I think about preppers in the traditional sense, they are people who know a lot about nature. They know how to do things like hunt and can. They're actually prepared. That is not these guys.
No, these guys do not want to learn how to forage the urban landscape after the apocalypse. They want to have servants and people that do everything for them. They think that because they've played video games like SimCity or Civilization, that they can take that approach to building a whole new world. Just give me some investment money and I'll go and clear cut a forest and build a beautiful eco village, you know, with its own special hydroponic gardens and special agricultural techniques. And they think that their idea, like one of them wants to build a farm that's using all of these plastic tubes that you keep the topsoil that's actually good topsoil in these large plastic tubes, and you grow the food out of that so you don't have to water the whole ground. You can just water your little tubes. And they have, you know, computer stacks and measuring things and sensors to see how moist and how quickly and how much sun and all that. And then whenever I show anything like this to a real farmer, they're like, well, what about when the topsoil in that tube gets contaminated? Or what about if it gets mold? You're going to have to change it out. You know, that they've got these very high-tech but extremely brittle and naive approaches to farming, because they've been farmers for all of 15 minutes and then think they can come and solve the agriculture problem the same way they solved, you know, the revision of some piece of software.
I want you to tell us about J.C. Cole and Safe Haven Farms. One of the quotes that you have from him really hit me. He says, honestly, I'm less concerned about gangs with guns, talking about encroaching on these isolated, you know, sequestered areas. I'm less concerned about gangs with guns than the woman at the end of the driveway holding a baby and asking for food. So what is he searching to create with Safe Haven Farms?
Yeah, he's an interesting guy. You know, he wrote to me right after I posted my first article about these billionaire preppers saying, I've got the answer for these guys. You've got to introduce me. He's building these farms that are going to be an hour or two away from major cities. And the idea is that the rich person pays $5 or $10 million now and then has a place to run when the event happens, you know, and everything falls apart. And the brilliance of his plan is that it's, you don't just invest in the sustainable farm that you're going to live in, but you're paying to invest in a company that's going to teach other people how to do this kind of farming. And that's the reason why no one wants to invest. The tech bro billionaires, they're like, wait a minute, what? Some of our money is going to be used to educate other people? Why would I waste my money on other people? It's all going to be on me, me, me.
And part of the safety is to change the way the supply chain works.
Yes.
One of the things he referenced were chicken farmers who don't actually hatch chickens. They buy chickens, so they don't even know how to have a rooster, hens who lay eggs, et cetera.
Yeah, I know. I remember we walked by his chicken coop and he goes, this is a real chicken coop. I've got roosters, right? And he's like, they don't know how to make chickens. They buy chickens and make the eggs. Or he said, you know, most farms, because they don't even have seeds. Most farms, they buy little sprouts from some central processing plant. Then they put those in the ground. And he's like, no, I've got seeds. You've got to be able to sustain yourself without being connected to this giant and brittle, you know, circuitous supply chain.
And are people knocking down his door to throw a mere $5 to $10 million at him to participate?
No, they're not, oddly enough. People are buying, you know, their own bunkers. They're buying, you know, shipping containers and having construction companies bury them under the ground with, you know, preposterous ideas with, you know, underground swimming pools and movie theaters. It's like a child's Twilight Zone fantasy for how to, you know, live through the apocalypse.
I have to say that it doesn't seem like this approach is actually viable for feeding oneself. It depends on so much delusionary thought. And one more thing, I searched your book for the word kitchen and it isn't there, which to me speaks volumes about who these people are.
Oh yeah, I don't think they go to the kitchen.
Or are concerned about having one to prepare food. They think the food is going to arrive underground like it does now with a click.
Oh, yeah. Or at best, you know, you pour water on a meal ready to eat, you know, one of those military things. But I think that they believe that they will have a chef on staff, along with a dentist and a private doctor and a concierge, you know, and someone to select their DVD for the evening. And it is a delusion. But these are the strategies they're using right now. This is their vision of the world. This is the way Uber works and DoorDash works and Grubhub and Facebook and all of their apps have the same underlying premise that none of the externalities matter. They don't contemplate the origins of things or the cycles of life.
Thank you so much, Douglas.
Oh, thank you.
That was Douglas Rushkoff, author of Survival of the Richest, Escape Fantasies of the Tech Billionaires.